In other news.
To determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Kind of scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to them and confront them. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. We listened to an interview with Jordan Maxwell, a researcher of the occult and religious philosophy. This was a bonus interview produced 7 years ago. It didn't air on the radio, but was packaged with the In Other News archives as a fundraiser premium. One focus of this show was to remind listeners that we're living in a reality structured by a very powerful secret society that continues to reign over populations using ritual, magic, and law. People are quick to point out the all-seeing eye in hidden logos or perched atop the terracotta of skyscrapers, yet that same image is consciously or not seen by millions every day on the United States dollar bill. In this interview, Jordan discusses how your body is owned by the New York Stock Exchange and that the United States is really a private corporation with 100 states, not 50. As many know, money created out of nothing is called debt. When you go to a bank to get a loan, the money isn't created from the transfer of precious metal. It's simply typed into an account. What is the dawn of the new day, and what does it really mean? As you'll hear, nothing works the way you think it does. For years, Jordan Maxwell has broken down the words and terms we use every day. The world is working very smoothly for those who are in control. And I understand if you're a regular listener to this show, this information is not hidden any longer. Jordan Maxwell became interested in these topics back in 1959. He was religion editor for Truth Seeker magazine, America's oldest freethought journal, since 1873. Let's have a listen to this interview. Jordan Maxwell, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Quite interesting that I'm back on a Pacifica station because I've done my own show on Pacifica in the past. So thank you for inviting me.
Tell listeners how you got involved in studying the occult and how this all got started with you.
Well, even as a young child, I was born and raised in Florida, in the Panhandle area, and I had so many strange experiences as a child. Really, really strange stuff happened to me. 8, 9, 10 years old, I was having incredible experiences that was teaching me. It was what I got from these experiences was the fact that the world is not exactly what you think it is. There's a lot more going on the earth than you think. Mm-hmm. And I became interested in secrets and the symbols and emblems and words that people use all through my teen years. While everybody else was out with hula hoops and skateboards, I would go to libraries and sit and read for hours and hours on symbols and religions, philosophies, and ideas. And I became very interested in Nazism and the Roman connection to Nazism. About 15, 16 years old, I was very interested in studying what the ancient Romans believed and how that impacted the Nazi movement in Europe. And, of course, from there, I got involved with researching and studying communism and fascism, and of course, always interested in theology and religion. By the time I reached the ripe old age of 19, when I ended up in Los Angeles, I left home at 18 and ended up at 19 years old coming into Los Angeles. I was fascinated by this tinsel town of Hollywood, and then I began having some really profound experiences, meeting some really interesting people and some extraordinary experiences that have impacted me as a 19-year-old. So I really began looking seriously into the world of the occult. And by that I mean I was not looking at the occult to learn from it, but to learn about it. And when I use the word occult, I simply mean it in the classical meaning of occult. It simply means hidden. It doesn't mean anything's evil or bad. It just means hidden. And so much of our government and religions have hidden truth from the people. And so much of the really important knowledge that we need, we've never been given because it's occult or hidden. And the way it's hidden is they give us entertainments and sports and drugs and everything else and alcohol to keep the people occupied, just as they did in ancient Rome. Because really important information, occult knowledge, hidden knowledge, it's on a need-to-know basis, and our masters don't figure we need to know. And so I became very interested in what we're not being told. I was able very quickly to learn how to find hidden knowledge. I met people who were very highly intelligent people who had done written books and were teachers and professors. I was just fascinated listening to people telling me, well, go check out this book, or go check out this subject and this one or that one. And it wasn't very long. I was in my mid-20s. I was already looking at the occult significance of our courts, banking, government, the words and the terms that are used in courts and in banks and commerce, and especially government. And fascinated, I was totally taken by the ancient and the prehistoric and ancient world, especially in the Mediterranean area, with the ancient cultures and how they lived and how they developed and how they impacted us today. And because we are nothing more than what we have learned from the ancient world. It's been a fascinating trip for the past 50 years of day in and day out pursuing dark subjects, things which most people will never even know exist.
I love it. Okay, 50 yeah. years, you're in your 20s in Los Angeles.
Right.
Meeting really interesting, highly knowledgeable people about on the occult and subjects related to that. And what books were you led to that sort of stuck out or are, I guess, prominent in looking back, reflecting back, that you might suggest people check out or purchase?
I think right off the bat, it comes to mind. I don't know if you've ever heard the experience that I've given on other radio shows and other interviews about the girlfriend I had when I was 19 years old. It was quite an experience for me. 19 years old, just arrived in California. I ended up in North Hollywood, not in Hollywood, but north of in the San Fernando Valley, North Hollywood. And so one morning I was downtown, and back in 1959, North Hollywood was just a very little Mickey Mouse little place, a lot of open spaces out in the valley because it wasn't grown up yet. And so I was in a little restaurant on downtown North Hollywood, 1959, and went in, and there was no seating anywhere, very small restaurant, but there was one seat at the counter, and I sat at the counter. There was a young girl sitting next to me. I'm 19. She was probably about 17. We started talking and found out that she lived just a couple blocks from where I did, and that she had walked downtown, and so had I. And so when we walked home, she lived about two blocks. I only lived about three blocks from town, and she lived about five blocks, but she lived two blocks further than I did, so I'd never walked her home. She knew where I lived, but I didn't know exactly where she lived. And so one night she came over to my house after meeting her for, I don't know, maybe 6 weeks to 2 months. One night she comes over to my place and she said, "My father wants to talk to you." And, of course, I wasn't interested to talk to any girl's father. But she said, "No, my dad is a very interesting and important man, and he's got something to tell you." Well, that sounded interesting, so I went with her. And when I came up to the house, he happened to be coming out of the house at the time. And when I saw him, the hair on the back of my neck, I felt some kind of a reaction from just seeing him. It was a strange feeling when I first saw him. And I thought, there's something about this guy that is not human. I mean, I felt it. and it's hard to explain the feeling, but I knew there was something about him.
Not human.
But he was very nice, very, very cordial, and I liked him.
Mm-hmm.
Very ordinary-looking guy, very ordinary-looking person. So we went in, and the two girls, my girlfriend and her younger sister, were sitting on the floor, and there was a long sofa in the front room, and the father sat on one end, and I sat on the other, and the mother was in the kitchen, and so he was asking me how I like living in California, how long have you been here, and are you working? Yes. Well, how do you like your job, et cetera, et cetera. And I was feeling a lot better about being in his company because I didn't know what to think about him. But I was letting my guard down. And when I felt pretty good about being in his company and we were enjoying talking, he suddenly said to me, he said, remember back when you were 8 years old back in Florida and your father built a new back porch and he made it out of green lumber and your uncle helped him tore down the old back porch and put a new back porch on. And he said, remember when that happened? And tears came to my eyes because it frightened me. And I, you know, I wasn't ready for that. And he looked at me very sternly and said, well, did that happen or didn't it? And I said, yes, that did happen. And he said, then one night you were like 8 years old, and one night you were in bed and you were supposed to be sleeping, but you got up and you went out in the back porch. And you sat on the back porch late at night, the moon was full, and you looked up at the moon and you talked to God, didn't you? And I looked at him. I didn't know what to say, but I didn't want to show tears in front of my girlfriend, but he was frightening me, really legitimately scaring me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, did you do that or didn't you? And I said, yes, I did that. And he said, well, what did you say to God? What did you say? And I just looked at him. He said, I'll tell you what you said. You asked God to let you do something important with your life, didn't you? And I shook my head, yes, that's what I said. And then he looked at me very, very nonchalant. Then he looked at me and said, now how would I have known that? How did I know any of that? And I looked at him and I said, I don't know how you know that. And he said, I know that because we were there. And I said, what do you mean we were there? He said, we were right there. We saw you. We heard you. You didn't see us, did you? No, I didn't see anyone. He said, well, how would I know what you did if I wasn't there? And so he really caught my attention, and I was both frightened and yet amused and fascinated.
Oh, and he really said unnerving.
Me, yeah, very. And my girlfriend's looking at me, and I've got tears in my eyes because he was frightening me. So he said, you're very interested in strange things, aren't you? And I said, yes. And he said, you're very interested in UFOs and aliens and all kinds of strange stuff like that, aren't you? And I said, yes, I am. He said, yes, I know that. And he said, would you like to see a UFOs up close tonight? And I said, yes, I'd love to. And he said, well, come on. I can do that for you. Come outside. And I looked at my girlfriend and her sister. They got up, and I walked out with him. The four of us are standing out in the yard, maybe about midnight, North Hollywood, 1959, and he looks up into the sky and starts inaudibly talking. His mouth is moving as if he's talking to someone, but there's no sound. And then he turns to me and he said, they said they'll be here in a few moments, and they'll be coming from Griffith Park area. They'll be coming from southeast, and they'll be here in a couple of minutes. And I said, who? And he said, well, you'll see. You said you wanted to see them, so they said they'll come and show you. And sure enough, about 4 or 5 minutes later, I see three beautiful, incredibly gorgeous disc-shaped things coming from the Griffith Park area, comes over our head, look to be about maybe 2,000, 2,500 feet up, three beautiful glowing discs. And I mean, I could go into detail, but the point being is that they were gorgeous, beautiful, and the one thing I remember about them is that the lights were beautiful colors, and they were laser kind of lights. They were very, very brilliant colors, and making no sound whatsoever, and they stopped over our head, three of them stopped in a triangle position, and waited for a few moments, and then he looked up and started talking again, and he said, they said that they're leaving, and they did. They began to move, and they began to go north, and we watched them as they faded out of sight. And I was amazed. I said, what was that? He said, that's us. We are here. And he said, why are you in California? And I said, I don't know why. I just had to come here. He said, that's right. We brought you here.
He said, brought you here.
Yeah, we.
Who do you think we is at this point?
I still do not know. And he said, we have brought you here because you did ask to do something with your life, so we're going to give you something to do. But it's not going to happen. What you have to do will not happen till the last part of your life. So we're going to begin your training tonight. That's why you're here. I'm going to begin your training tonight. And he said, the first thing I want you to do is read a book. That's going to begin your journey. And that was the book. It was called The Complete Works of Charles Fort, F-O-R-T. You can get it in any bookstore today. It's still a major seller, even today, 50 years later. It's still a very big seller in all bookstores today, called The Complete Works of Charles Fort.
Oh, yeah.
F-O-R-T. It's an extraordinary book with incredible stuff in it.
It is.
I'm not going to go into it too long, but I took that book home. I was fascinated with the stuff that was in that book, and that changed my life overnight. I had already, you know, as I said, as a child, had all these strange experiences going out of body, seeing things coming into my bedroom at night at 7 and 8, 9 years old. And I lived in an area where UFOs were very, very pronounced all the time. And there was all kinds of strange things happening in that little town that I came from. So,
Near the Panhandle in Florida.
Yeah.
Near Eglin Air Force Base.
That's exactly right. I was very near there. The Gulf Breeze was a place I hung out all the time. And that was a very famous area for UFOs.
Well, it was a hot spot.
And that's where I was born and raised, in that area. And so that began a whole journey for me. And from there, I began meeting. I got a job, quite by chance, from a lady who lived next door to where the little rooming house I was in. And she was a seamstress for the motion picture studios, very, very well connected with the motion picture industry. And she had a room for rent. And so I got out of the room I was in and took the room at her house. And I ended up working for her as a gopher. I would drive the car for her, and so she was a seamstress for the motion picture studios, which meant I had to go to all the major motion picture studios, to all the big stars, and bring their clothes, bring their private clothes or their clothes in the movies that they were doing. I was traveling all over Hollywood, meeting all the top producers, all the top movie stars, as a 19, 20, 21-year-old kid. And I began meeting all kinds of interesting people, writers in Hollywood, sci-fi writers, producers, directors. So I began meeting important people in Hollywood, and I started meeting very powerful people, underworld people, mafiosis, gangsters, but big-time movie stars. Hmm. And it was just fascinating. One day to the next, I was meeting strange and interesting and important people and listening to them and gaining their confidence. And they would tell me things to, you know, to research, look at this or look at that. That's kind of like the way I grew up in Hollywood in California. It hasn't stopped. I'm still fascinated with how the world really works. The one thing I would say that I want everyone to keep in mind, this is one thing I have learned after 50 years of my life on this and doing what I do. I'm 70, so I've been doing this work for 50 years. I have learned one thing important, and that is that nothing in this world is what you think it is. Nothing.
What do you mean by that?
Nothing works the way you think it does. Nothing. It's just an extraordinary education when you find out how the world actually, in fact, works. Banks do not loan money. The police are not empowered to protect you. The law actually says they are not responsible to protect you whatsoever. Governments do not do what you think they do. Courts, that's a big subject, the law and courts. courts are not empowered to do what you think they do. And so when you start breaking down the words, the terms, the symbols, how governments actually work, how banks and corporations in fact work, not the way you think they do, then the lunacy that we see all around us begins to make sense. Because, you know, if you're looking at the world from an uneducated outsider's view, it looks like this world is loony. It's crazy. It does all kinds of crazy, stupid things. But in point of fact, no, you're the one that's ill-informed and unread. The world is working very smoothly for those who are in control. It works very smoothly. You just don't understand how the law works and how the government works.
I've heard someone say the government doesn't make mistakes.
You know, like Lady Di. That was another Lady Di's assassination. That was another accident, you know. And you can go down the line, but most people, this kind of knowledge, as I said before, is on a need-to-know basis, and most people don't need to know. All they need to know is if the Lakers are playing and how the Dodgers are doing, because this kind of knowledge has nothing to do with the mundane world that people live in. But people who are on the inside, in government and law enforcement, etc., that I've talked to over the years, detectives, mafiosis, gangsters, judges, federal judges, movie stars, I've talked to all kinds of people over the past 50 years that most people will never be privy to even know exist. And the things that I have learned from them is absolutely fear-inspiring. It's really scary when you understand how the world really works.
I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you brought this up, because it seems to me one of your starting points was understanding how you really can't get anywhere in politics and in the law unless you belong to a Freemasonic order.
Well, as you know, let me go back and start someplace else. If you have a two-story building and you're going to put a lot of weight on the second floor, like printing presses and large computers and whatever, anything that's going to be very heavy, The smart thing to do is go downstairs first with a building inspector, go on a ladder, and go through the ceiling tiles on the first floor and look at the foundation of the second floor that you're going to build on. So what you're doing is looking at the foundation to see if it's going to hold the kind of weight you're going to put on it. So what you're doing is you're standing under the foundation you're going to build on. And that's where we get our word, understanding. So if you haven't done homework and looked at the words and the terms and the symbols and how the world works, then you don't have understanding, because nothing works the way you think it does. A classic example is what's going on right now in Arizona.
Right.
With the problem of immigration problems in Arizona, I can totally and completely understand the feelings and the concerns of the people of Arizona. I understand what their concerns are. I understand what's happening there. But what the people of Arizona don't know, and I'm not condemning them, I understand their feelings. I understand the feelings on all sides. But what the people of Arizona do not know, and what the American people in general do not know, Arizona does not have a lawful or legal right to do what it's doing. And the reason why is because Arizonian people, the people of Arizona, are United States citizens. They are U.S. citizens. They are not Americans. There is a world of difference between being a sovereign American and a U.S. citizen. This is a very big subject that most people will never hear anything about, but has been known for hundreds of years.
The difference between being an American citizen and a citizen of the United States.
And a U.S. citizen, yes.
How does this apply to this situation?
Well, first of all, the United States government is a privately owned corporation. It's a company. It's a corporation. And according to all corporate law, anyone can start a corporation, anyone. But if you do start a corporation, you must abide by corporate law. Corporate law says if you have a corporation, you have to have a president of the corporation. That's why you have a president of a bank, bank presidents. You have a president of General Motors, a president of Ford, the president of Sears. Because they're corporations, they must have a president. So the word president in corporate law means you are the head of a corporation. And corporate law also states that you must have a vice president and a secretary treasurer. That's corporate law for a corporation. The United States is a world of difference between the United States and the United States of America. Two different entities completely. And when I ask people how many states are in the Union, they will tell you 50. That is wrong. There is 100 states in the confederation we call the U.S. The United States has 100 states because every state is divided into two states. Let me give you an example. In California, we have something called California State. Cal State universities are Cal State Northridge, Cal State Long Beach. You have Cal State this and Cal State that. That's California State. But you also have something called the State of California. Hmm. Now, the State of California has nothing whatsoever to do with California State. Two different entities, totally. Cal State or Alabama State or New York State is the state itself. And New York State is New York, the land and the people on it. But the State of New York or the State of Alabama is a federal enclave. It's a federal establishment operating within the state. So anytime you hear the State of, that is the federal government operating within a sovereign state. The United States is different. The word United States is the word is a name. The word United States is a name of a corporation. It was incorporated in the 1870s, after the Civil War, there was a privately owned corporation incorporated as a business, a privately owned corporation that was referred to as the United States Corporation. And the United States Corporation obviously had to have a president and a vice president and secretary treasurer. And so the United States Corporation today has employees. And the employees are working for the corporation called United States. So there are two states in every state, Alabama State and State of Alabama.
And the Alabama State belongs to the state.
What I'm trying to say is that the people of Arizona are not sovereigns. They do not have control over their state because they are United States citizens. And the word United States being used that way in any good law dictionary, and if you go on my website, you need to go on my website to Jordan Maxwell. That's Jordan, like the river, Jordan Maxwell, .com. Go to my links, and the links page, a button at the top, and scroll down in the links, and you will come to Commerce and Law. And there's about five or six links. All the information I'm telling you is right there. It's on links on my website under Commerce and Law. Go there and read it all. It's sitting right there in front of you.
Oh, wonderful. So, I will, actually.
Yeah, it's a fascinating study of words, how this all really works behind the scenes. So if you are a United States citizen, you are not... You are an employee of a foreign corporation. The law books, if you go to the law books, you will see, and I spend a lot of time at law libraries, and I've got the documents, photocopies, I've put them on my website, showing the law books are saying that the United States Corporation is a foreign corporation, and so to the United States of America. So when you ask someone, can you pick out the United States on a map, and people will point to North America and think this is the United States. No, it is not. In fact, in point of law, it is not. The United States is a privately owned company incorporated in the 1870s, and its home office is in something called the 10 Mile Square, or the Federal Enclave. So Washington, D.C. is the home office of a massive privately owned corporation called United States Corporation, Incorporated in 1870. It has nothing to do with the American people. And so, therefore, there are two entities operating here, United States Corporation and United States of America. United States of America is the republic. United States is a privately owned company. It's incorporated. If you are a U.S. citizen, then that means that you are an employee of a foreign corporation under maritime law. Now, most people have never heard any of this, and it's totally foreign because it has nothing to do with basketball. But if you take the time to go into the library and look up, and well, even today it's far more easier. You don't have to leave your home. Just go to my website, as I said, and go to links and scroll down till you see Commerce and Law, and there it is. Read it all. And all the law books are there. All the quotes are there. It's all sitting right in front of you to explain it to you that the United States is not representing America. United States is a corporation.
So, by legal definition.
That's right. By legal, lawful definition in a court of law, when you use the term United States, that means to any good attorney, federal attorneys or federal judges, that means you are talking about a privately owned company. It's incorporated. It's a company. It has a president. So today, Obama is the president of a privately owned company, just as General Motors has a president, Ford Motor Company has a president, Baskin-Robbins has a president, Sears has a president, and the bank has a president. Well, and he is the president of a corporation also. But the bottom line on this is if you are a U.S. citizen, you are an employee of a foreign corporation under maritime law. Nothing to do with America the Republic, period.
Very interesting and an important distinction. You also talk about having your name in capital letters.
Yeah, and that's just part of you, and that's all on my website. It's all explained. But there's two ways. See, there's two of you. Just as there are two states, there's two of you. There's the one your parents brought into the world and the one that the government owns and controls. And those two are totally distinctively different people. The one that the government controls and owns is one thing. The one that your parents brought into the world, that's you, your flesh and blood self. And so there's two of you. And so in law, we call it on the public and private side. So there's a private you and there's a public you. Now, how do you tell the difference? If I'm dealing with you and we're sitting in a restaurant and I'm dealing with you and we're talking about some kind of a deal between you and I, if I put my hands on you, if I put my hand on your shoulder, I'm dealing with the physical you. Now, how do you differentiate the private you, the personal you, to the business you? Because if I have a falling out with you, I cannot physically harm you. I can take you to court. I can sue you. But that's the legal you. That's the lawful you. But I can't come to your home and harm you. So there's two of you, the private you and the public you. How do you tell the difference? Well, the way you tell the difference in international law is the way your name is written. The way your name is written is depends on which one of you I'm dealing with. If you write your name with upper and lower case letters, that is dealing with you, the flesh and blood you. But if I am dealing with the one that I can take to court, the lawful you that's represented in law, then that your name will be in all capital letters. All capital letters. That's why in your driver's license, on your insurance, on your bills you get from the gas company, any and all business, whatever the business is, must be sent to an all capital letters name. You will not get any kind of bill from government, lawsuits, gas bills, utility bills, insurance. I don't care what the bill is. It must be, your name must be in all capital letters. Because what the capital letters represent is that you are being capitalized on. You are being, you are capital. You are a maritime admiralty product. It's a very big story. And how it works is really interesting and fascinating, how banks work and how courts work. And it's such a large story that it's so difficult to explain, you know, in one sitting. If you come into this country unlawfully, you are referred to as undocumented. Because the United States is a corporation, and because you are an employee of a privately owned company, of which Obama is merely the president of a privately owned company, but the stockholders who own the United States federal government is a handful of people who actually own the government. It's a privately owned corporation. And so he is merely the president. He's not the chief stockholder. Those are the guys who run the planet, the guys who actually own the Washington, D.C., who own the corporation. So if you are, if you're coming into this country and working and making money, then you are, but you're not a U.S. citizen. That means you are making money, but you are not an employee of the corporation. Therefore, they can put a lien on you. It's like a mechanic's lien. If somebody paints your house and you don't pay them, they can put a lien on your home. And so if you come into this country and start working, then you are making money, and the corporation does not own you. So they can put a lien on you. That's why you're called an alien. No, it's because they put a lien on you. Therefore, you are an alien. So when you come across the border, they put a lien on you. You're an alien. And the people of Arizona have no right to do anything lawfully and legally because they are not sovereigns. They are not sovereigns. They are U.S. citizens. And as U.S. citizens, that means everyone in Arizona that is a U.S. citizen is an employee of a foreign corporation, a privately owned company that calls the shots. I mean, I don't care how many people Sears has working for him, Sears is still the boss. And you can have 500 people working at one Sears. It doesn't matter. Sears is still the boss. And so all of you can vote for something. You can all vote for some in-house thing that you're voting on, but it doesn't matter. Sears' stockholders still own the company. And so that's what's happening here. The Arizonian people feel that they have a right to sovereign protection of their state. In fact, it's the Arizona state is not at large. What's happening is the state of Arizona. And the people who are called U.S. citizens in Arizona are members of a privately owned company, and they don't realize it. They think that they are Arizonians, have a right to do what they want with their state. They don't. They are not American citizens. They are U.S. citizens. And again, U.S. citizen means that they are an employee of a foreign corporation, of which Obama is the president of the corporation. There's a world of difference between the United States and the United States of America. One is a republic and one is a privately owned company. So all I'm saying at the bottom line on this is Obama represents a privately owned corporation. And it's very interesting when you find out who the founders of the corporation in 1870 was, because those are the people who actually own the federal government of the United States corporation.
This is a good transition into what you've been teaching and speaking and researching about for, I guess, the past 50 years, and that is the very powerful secret societies that operate behind the scenes. Operate behind the governments and the churches.
Yes. Oh, God, yes. I mean, what a subject that is. I mean, when you understand how churches work and what a church is and where the word church comes from, people and Christians use words today every day and have no idea in the world what the words mean. But if you really start breaking down the words and terms and find out what these words mean, it'll blow your mind, because people have no idea in the world when they're talking about church or synagogue or mosque. They have no idea in the world where these words come from and what they actually mean. So when you start tracing it back, you will find out that nothing is what you thought it was.
I agree with that. And you've led me to really see some things very differently, profoundly differently, especially right here in New York. You see a lot of interesting things, especially with the church, St. John Divine.
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, why do you even have a state called New York? It goes back to York, England. When the Roman Empire moved into Britannia and moved into what we call England, the Roman powers that be, when they moved into England, set up their seat of power. Caesar's seat of power was in a city called York. I know I was there. I went all through their castles in York, England. So York, England was a seat of power for the Romans in Britannia. And so when the power base moved out of York into the New World, it became known as New York. And that whole area on the East Coast became New England. And therefore, that same tyrannical tyrant presence on the earth of the old Roman Empire with the Caesars is still with us today. We call it New York, New Hampshire. Everything new is New England.
You had mentioned that the York Rite Freemasons.
Of course. Well, and that's why you have New York. As far as I'm concerned, I don't have any complaints or any problems with American Masonry at all. European Masonry and British Grand Lodge Masonry in Britain and on the continent, that's different. But American Masonry, I don't have any problem with at all. For the most part, there's always going to be bad apples in any human organization. But the men who founded this country that were Masons were good people trying to do something to liberate their fellow man from all the tyranny that was going on in Europe at the time. And so I have the highest of regard for the great people and the founding fathers who wanted, because you can say what you want to about the people who founded this country, but for one thing you got to admit, it did for the first time in the history of the human race offer to anyone freedom, to be free, to come here, live your life, and do whatever you want, and you don't have to crawl on your knees till your knees are bleeding to before the Holy Father in Rome or before Caesar and being thrown into prison and treated like an animal. You could come to America and be free. But I don't care what you say about the Founding Fathers, but the ultimate goal was that we became a free people, and it began to grow all over the world because all the world wants to be free.
I'm glad you brought that up, Jordan, because I certainly have some questions about that relating specifically to the Freemasons that had developed the United States and especially the layout in Washington, D.C., and some people say that they're...
Well, I know. I've heard all the stories.
Of course. My question is, though, you have Albert Pike and Morals and Dogma and the Scottish Rite Temple, and the question that comes up a lot, well, first of all, they have their own calendar, and a lot of things are very secret, and you have to be a Freemason to be a politician practically in the United States. And a lot of people suspect that it isn't God that a lot of the Freemasons worship. In fact, it's some other deity that...
Well, that I know. That is, and I know because I've heard that from, especially that kind of thinking comes from the church, comes from the Christian church. And
yes,
the Christian church is not as, I will tell you, I have discovered this. It only took me 50 years. The Christian church itself, and its very inception, all through the Middle Ages, all through the Middle Ages up until now, the Christian church is a product of Masonry. Masonry gave birth to the Christian church. And so the people who actually founded the Jewish religion many, many centuries ago were the people that we would today refer to as secret societies or Freemasons. So Judaism and Christianity owe their beginnings to organizations which have become known today as Freemasonry. It weren't called that in the first century, but they were the same organization still exists today. And so Christianity is a Masonic fraternity. It is a Masonic order. And once you start looking at the words and the terms and the symbols, in the Bible and in the religions of Christianity and Judaism, and begin for the first time to see where these words and terms and symbols have come from, they were all borrowed from Freemasonry. So when you're condemning Freemasonry, you're condemning the founding fathers of Christianity and Judaism. And most people have no idea in the world what the symbol. I've got a video that I'm working on that's going to be at least a three-hour, minimum of a three-hour, two-DVD set. I'm almost ready to release. I've been working on it for about 10 years now on the back of the dollar bill, the symbol on the dollar bill with the pyramid, the all-seeing eye, tracing it back from day one and to the most ancient past, where it was used 5,000 years ago, where it was used 1,000 years ago, why it was used in Britannia and Rome, and where what it meant then, and now how it is being used today, and what it means today. And it's an extraordinary story that I will guarantee you, you have never heard. You have never heard the story I'm going to tell you, and it's going to take a minimum of 3 hours. Go on my website to What's New. Just go on to Jordan Maxwell. And this is another thing you need to know about. Go on my website to jordanmaxwell.com.
Okay.
And go to What's New. And you will see all the products and books and materials that I've got. One in particular is two in particular, they're very important. Scroll down and you will see a DVD with three typewritten manuscripts, three books, but they're all typewritten manuscripts. And I have put them onto a DVD, and it's called The Priesthood of the Illes. Priesthood of the Illes, I-L-L-E-S. And beneath that is another video, about a 90-minute lecture I did, about the world today in America, how it really works, and it's called The Dawn of a New Day. Dawn of a New Day and Priesthood of the Illes are two very shocking and controversial subjects that you'll want to see. And of course, my first one at the top of the page is Moses. I've got a thing on Moses, the real story of Moses, not the story you thought you knew, but the real story of Moses, where Moses actually came from. And then there's another video called The Hidden Dimension in World Affairs. All of these subjects are extremely controversial. Most people have never heard any of this, but it's all right here in your face, and I'm putting it out for everyone to see. So go to my website and go to What's New.
What's New.
And everything is there. And, of course, as I said before, go also to the links, and you will see under Commerce and Law all the information about the corporation called United States.
Why is this important to know, all these topics? Why is it important for people to know this?
Well, I think it's important because for the first time you will understand who owns your body. Your very body is a security on the New York Stock Exchange. If you look on the back of your Social Security card, you will see a series of numbers. Sometimes those numbers on the back of the Social Security cards are in red. And the reason why is because it represents your blood. And so the numbers on the front of a Social Security card is your number, is your membership number in the corporation. You know, if you work for General Motors and you go to work, you've got a badge that shows that you are legitimately an employee, and it has a badge number. Well, that Social Security card shows that you are a member of a foreign corporation on the maritime law, and that is your security number. You are a security for what is called the body social. This is why you get Social Security, because you are the security for the corporation. And as long as you're working, they are secure. And so you are the security on the stock market because they're buying and selling your body on the stock market. And so you need to understand how the whole thing works. It's so extraordinary. This information, most people will never figure it out because it's too foreign for them, you know, for most people to fathom. But it's all right there. All you need to do is just read and study maritime law, international law, how churches work, what is the word, where does the word church come from. All that's on my website. Everything I'm talking about is all on my website. All you got to do is take some time and go to my website and do some research. look at all the parts of my research on the website, because there's a lot of stuff there that most people have never seen. They just don't go through the website thoroughly.
This interview will be in the hands of a lot of progressive thinkers and a lot of progressive activists in the New York area. What would you say to them? That why is it important to know about secret societies and to know about symbolism and to know about the mysticism of law and police forces? And is it even possible to get out of the grips of these powerful secret societies?
No, it is not.
So
it's not possible.
They've taken us over. Now,
that's right.
Now what do we do?
Well, you just go along to get along, or you go to jail. You can go along to get along and get your work permit, which is a diploma or a degree from a degree, you know, like the third degree or the 32nd degree or 33rd degree. And so you get a degree from a university, which is a work permit. So that now you can go out and get a job, because if you don't have a degree, chances are you're not going to find a very good job, if you find a job at all. And so once you understand how the world works, how courts work, why do you go to court? You play basketball on a court. You play tennis on a court. And when you go into a court, the judge rules from the bench. A bench is a Latin word for a bank. And the whole idea in a court is it's a game. You've got one team, and they call it a team of lawyers, and one team sits on one side, and the other team sits on the other. And the whole idea in a court, like basketball, is to put the ball back in the other guy's court. So one team picks up the ball and throws it over to your side, and then your team picks it up and throws it back at you. And the judge is there wearing a black robe. Black robes represent the planet Saturn. Saturn was the great god of banking and law. So the judge represents the bank, and he represents the law. And that's why he wears a black robe, because he represents the planet Saturn. That's another whole subject about symbols in courts and the planet Saturn. Saturn was referred to as Lord of the Rings. And he's still the Lord of the Rings. Men were told to get married before their god, so they wear a wedding ring. The women were told to listen to their god. They wear an ear ring. Saturn was the god of the old Hebrews. And many, many hundreds of years ago, Saturn was very important to the ancient Hebrew people. And the Star of David is not the Star of David at all. Even the Encyclopedia Judica will tell you, the Star of David is a hexagram, not called the Star of David. It's called a hexagram. And a hexagram is a symbol for the planet Saturn. Look it up in any good astrological dictionary. Saturn's symbol was a hexagram.
Wasn't there a hexagram on the north?
The north pole of Saturn.
Yes.
So there's a lot of things people do not know, because this, again, most people have never heard any of this occult or hidden knowledge. And so that's what I've been trying to do, just wake people up to the fact that nothing is operating the way you think it is. Nothing.
There are so many more questions that I would want to ask you, and I know we're running out of time, but is there something that you think is important now in these last few minutes to wrap up with that the listeners may want to know?
Yes. I would say I don't care what anyone thinks of my work or of my person. I don't care. At 70 years old, I've done what I've done for 50 years. But I am open to let people go to my website and just go to links and scroll down to law and commerce, read the documentation, read all of it, and see what you think. I don't care if you believe me or not. It doesn't matter. I know what I know, because it took me 50 years to get it. And I'm making it available, like in my products. If you go to what's new on my website, there's a lot of really controversial stuff there that all you need to do is, especially that Priesthood of the Illies, is three books on that's just got incredible information on symbols and words that are used in churches and religion. You want a real eye-opener about the United States and where we are as a country, as a republic, where we are today, get the video called Dawn of a New Day.
Jordan Maxwell, thank you so much for being on the show. World-renowned occult scholar, also in the field of religious philosophy. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, that's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.